Hello, welcome to Ofsted Talks. I'm Bryony Balsam and today we're talking about alternative provision. Firstly, let me welcome our guests. Here today with us we have Mark Vickers, who's chair of the National MAT CEO Network for Alternative Provision and Special Educational Needs and Disabilities and CEO of Olive Academies. We have Grace, who attends the Olive Academy in Cambridge.
Jo Fisher, the chair of the ADCS Education Committee.
And we have Steve Shaw, who's one of Ofsted's senior His Majesty's inspectors for SEND, Special Educational Needs and Disabilities. So alternative provision or AP settings are places that provide education for children who can't go into a mainstream school. In January last year, we launched our new Area SEND framework for Ofsted. Until then, there wasn't much of a coherent overview of how commissioning and oversight practices worked at a local level or of the mix of AP that local area partners were using. So that's why Ofsted and the Care Quality Commission now inspect local areas' approach to commissioning and overseeing AP as part of our joint area SEND inspections, and in February this year we published a report into our findings about six local areas. We wanted to find out whether AP is meeting the health, educational and care needs of young people, how it's being used, what's helping, and indeed what's hindering local partners from working together. Mark, can I come across to you to set the scene around what exactly AP is, why we need it, who's it for?
Alternative provision plays a really important part within the broader education offer for children and young people. At its best, its purpose is to help pupils to re-engage with their education generally, often through short-term interventions before returning to mainstream school for a fresh start in a new setting. Can also be providing more long-term placements and support for young people, particularly at Key Stage 4. And increasingly, AP settings are providing upstream early intervention preventative support through outreach to avoid the need for exclusions in the first place.
Grace, can you talk to us a little bit about your experience?
So I started last March. Coming into it, I was very, very scared. Like, because obviously at the start of my school, I didn't always feel 100%. I never wanted to go in. My attendance dropped down to about 6%. So it got to the point where they didn't really want me in the school anymore because it wasn't working for me. So then I got managed moved to three different other schools, but that didn't work for me either. So the last opportunity was coming to Olive. So I started here, and at first I was very wary because I didn't know no one here. But from the first week, I literally just went straight in. Everyone was so lovely. The teachers are amazing here with like English and maths and that. Like, they sit you down and you just get that one-to-one. Like, in a normal school, you don't get that one-to-one. It's like, okay, I'll tell you the answer. Then it's like you still don't understand as well. Here, they'll like repeat it 100 times over and over again until you're like, okay, I get that now. With like anxiety wise, I just feel so much more like myself now and so much more happier than where I was a year ago. I feel like this school's just brought out such like a new person of who I am.
Mark, what Grace has described sounds like an incredibly special environment for her to be able to develop in. How do you make that work?
It's effectively drawing on the very best practice of mainstream in terms of the same expectations. So we don't lower our expectations at all. But what we do is that we do it slightly differently. So the experience for those young people, we're not trying to recreate a small version of a mainstream school, because clearly that hasn't been successful for those young people. They've found that a challenge. But we want to not lose the importance of a really strong education in terms of thinking about those educational outcomes as well in terms of qualifications. So we have really strong teaching at all levels, and that will be, you know, a big focus on core, so no English, math, science particularly. But we have a much broader curriculum, and that's based on understanding the needs of young people. So we have a layered therapeutic offer in terms of supporting those young people with a range of therapeutic professionals who are part of our staff group at Olive Academies. And we also have a very broad, and we think interesting, and Grace could tell me otherwise if not, outdoor learning curriculum. And that's broad and layered again, and and personalised and as bespoke as we can make it within confines of budgets to the needs of the young people. And the idea of our outdoor learning curriculum, which has been around with Olive Academy since we started as a MAT 9 years ago, is to really build up people's confidence through improving their resilience. They come to us with, you know, some real challenges around that. And Grace obviously has just articulated that in terms of how she felt transitioning, coming out of a mainstream school into Olive. But one of the things I'm very proud of is hearing Grace talk about how she's been able to sort of move on quickly in her learning and engagement at Olive. And that's because, you know, we provide those opportunities to take young people slightly out of their comfort zone, but in a very careful, managed way through a range of, we hope, quite creative, interesting activities. And it just changes the dynamic.
Yeah, I think with offsite, it's nice because you have your days on site where you are doing your work, but then you have them days where you do go offsite and you do learn new things. And it is really good, like learning new communicational skills from doing stuff that you've never done before by getting out there and doing bold new things that you wouldn't do in your everyday life. It is a great experience.
Thanks so much for sharing with us. Steve, so having heard that from Grace, can I come across to you just to say a little bit about why Ofsted decided to look into AP commissioning?
I think it's probably fair to say that for quite a while, Ofsted's had some concerns. You know, we're concerned around, for example, where AP wasn't necessarily being commissioned in the best interests of children and young people. Some variety around the quality of AP and the monitoring of pupils' progress when they're in AP. And I think we've been worried about what do outcomes look like for children in AP, and are the commissioners really clear on what they hope the AP outcomes will look like for those young people? And if you then add into that mix the challenge around the use of unregistered AP, the multiple routes into AP from schools through LAs, that has meant that some of the quality of the oversight for children and young people in AP is variable.
Thanks, Steve. And you took the words right out of my mouth. It's just such a complex and fragmented picture with so many different routes and variables that and pathways that young people can take through it. It's incredibly complex. Jo, I wonder whether I could bring you in here just to say a little bit about what the backgrounds of challenges looks like against which we're putting this fragmented AP picture.
Before the pandemic, but especially since the pandemic, the number of exclusions, both permanent and fixed term exclusions, really increasing. And alongside that, we know that so many of our children and young people just aren't attending school consistently in the way we'd want. We've seen the persistent absent rates for the current academic year stand something close to the region of 20%, which is well above pre-pandemic levels. We know that there are far too many children who are now not in school or not in any form of education that we really do need to support. And be clear that actually being out, you talked yourself about what's in a child's best interest. We know that being out of school is rarely in a child's best interest. And it's really important that we all work together to build an inclusive education system that puts children, I think, back in the classroom and back where they should be, because every day counts. That said, you know, it's really good to hear Grace talk and to recognise, I think, that alternative provision does have a really important part to play in all of this. And it's really important, I guess, that it's seen as part of an inclusive education system. It shouldn't be about exclusion. This is about, as Mark said, helping children and young people re-engage in learning. But not just that. I was smiling as Grace talked. It's about building people's confidence, self-esteem and aspirations as well. It's that wider thing. And I know when I go out and visit children in the alternative provision where I work in Hertfordshire, you know, that's when I see the really best practice. It's when I see children or young people like Grace not just getting on and learning and being interested in learning, but also talking about how much better they feel in themselves too. So that really holistic picture. And there are thousands of children every day in some form of alternative provision. Steve talked about the, you know, the fragmented picture that we're seeing, and that, you know, we've got over 25,000 pupils in any time in the sort of state-funded alternative provision. So we call them pupil referral units, or where I work, we call them education support centres, but also alternative provision academies and free schools. And there's about that number again in school arranged alternative provision. you set that alongside all the other types of alternative provisions, such as special schools, independent special schools, we've got a massive range of provision out there with a lot of children who deserve the very best help to be included in school and education. So I think I really welcome the Ofsted report, because I think it sets some really big challenges for us all to work together and really be clear about what we mean when we talk about alternative provision, what good looks like, what people like Grace and her family should expect when they go to some form of alternative provision.
Thanks, Jo. Grace, you've spoken about anxiety issues that you've had. Do you feel the link between the pandemic, and do you feel like this is something that's been incredibly formative for you and your peers?
I 100% agree, because I think with the pandemic, a lot more people stopped going out, like a lot more kids just wanted to be at home all the time. And then when it was, they were so used to sitting at home on the computer doing all their work all the time. When it was time to go back to school, it was a big push again.
And Mark, that chimes with your experience?
Oh, completely. I think it's interesting. I mean, obviously just looking more broadly at this, thinking about my role across the national network, when we look at the current attendance figures, the most recent DfE return showed for the first time since I've been in education, attendance in alternative provision just falling underneath the 60% figure for the first time. So close to half and just not attending, not accessing on a daily basis. Now that clearly can't be a good thing in any way, shape or form, and is a real concern. And it is often young people that, okay, their attendance is improving when they come to alternative provision from their starting points, which could be in the single figures or at zero when they come into the setting. But I think it is good to see that incrementally that is increasing in the strongest settings. And I think, as Steve said, there's such a variety of quality around provision, and such a variety, therefore, of practices around how schools, MATs, some providers are encouraging young people to come in and managing attendance, particularly through their strategies. I'm delighted that the last year's round of wave of new attendance hubs included two alternative provision MATs, one in the Northeast and Olive Academies as the second one, and being able to support a range of not just AP settings but mainstream settings as well, because there's lots of good practice that's happening in alternative provision that a number of our mainstream colleagues are really finding useful to really work, think about engaging with the hardest to reach young people particularly.
So Steve, what do we find in the report? What commissioning practices are we seeing? Are we seeing patterns between regions?
We did find some strong practice. You know, we found commissioning practice that was really clear, where it had the best interests of children and young people at heart, where there was a real strategy that sat behind it, where there were really clear processes for monitoring the quality of it and so on. We found some interesting things around the lack of national standards to do with AP. And that's a particularly interesting question around what might national standards in AP look like, where to compare the outcomes of young people in AP with the outcomes of young people in mainstream wouldn't be relevant, meaningful or fair in many cases. That kind of absence of clarity from the centre around what might really effective AP look like. And that's something that DfE is working on, but that absence was interesting. We found a lack of clarity on responsibilities for AP commissioning and oversight, leading to inconsistent and effective practice. And often that's made worse by underdeveloped strategic planning and an insufficiently clear purpose of AP and a lack of monitoring of children's outcomes. So at its worst, I mean, we understand at Ofsted that there are real challenges around sufficiency and capacity for AP. There aren't enough places, and that often AP is being asked to take on a kind of a shadow SEND role, a specialist setting for youngsters with SEND. We understand that. We saw that. But we also saw where commissioning was very much sort of in the moment, what we might call spot purchasing. We sometimes found that agencies weren't strategically collaborating with each other. So, for example, the teams around education, around care, around health weren't routinely and always talking with one another. And we would find that mirrored sometimes with EHCPs, where those services weren't in communication, weren't talking, weren't liaising with one another. And decisions around placing children in AP were often not rigorous enough and placements not monitored. So as a result, children's outcomes were really inconsistent in the areas that we visited. We did find a picture of a system that's in desperate need of reform. We've made some recommendations around the need for real care around what we've referred to as subcontracting. So this is where, for example, a youngster might be placed in an AP, but that AP then decides, for various reasons, that the youngster needs to be placed somewhere else in another AP or two or more APs. So that child or young person has a real kind of jigsaw provision across a week. And that raises all kinds of safeguarding challenges and safeguarding questions, as well as those questions around who's actually got an oversight and a grip on that coherent, cohesive quality of education that young person is getting if their education is fragmented across a number of different settings.
I was actually delighted, to be honest, really pleased about the kind of recognition of where the challenges are and the, you know, the need for change. And I particularly liked the fact that some of those recommendations link really well to the broader reform agenda, DfE's reform agenda for alternative provision as set out in the Send an AP Improvement Plan, particularly focusing on, you know, the need for clarity around arrangements for young people within AP, because you can't move anywhere near a high quality three-tiered approach to alternative provision without that clarity around commissioning particularly.
But we also know that too many children do have negative experiences, and too often they don't return to mainstream school. Them and their parents feel like alternative provision is more of a destination than a sort of a way of re-engaging with mainstream education. So, you know, I recognise what the report said. And I think, you know, fundamentally, rather than it being a destination, it's got to be a form of intervention that really is crafted towards helping young people really do well in school, in the classroom, you know, alongside their existing school's curriculum. It offers that sort of bespoke sequence curriculum, which often isn't available in a mainstream school, and includes subjects and vocational courses such as horticulture and animal care and mechanics. And I met a young person just recently who's, you know, now got onto a great Ford apprenticeship because of the sort of really bespoke curriculum he followed. And there's also something about how mainstream schools play their part in this too. Making sure there's that very clear, and I can see Mark nodding, but, you know, just making sure there's that really clear continuum of support. And I know that many, many schools are really inclusive and work hard to be inclusive, but that's not true of all of them.
What I really welcome around the recommendations and the findings of the report is it moves, and you put that report alongside the three-tiered approach is set out, as I said, in the AP and SEND implementation plan. You can just see a sort of roadmap, if you like, to a place where young people can get that experience, like Grace and others in really strong AP settings have nationally at the moment, but more consistently. And I think that's so important, because without those points being joined up and the commissioning being absolutely nailed and understood around what the purpose of that the young person's placement is, and crucially, how will their engagement and their progress be tracked, monitored, supported, so that they can transition to the next right place on the continuum, wherever that may be on their journey.
To wrap up, I think probably we need to put a marker down that we've asked more questions than we've got answers for today. So, Steve, what are the next plans?
We currently have an AP strategy, which is to do with a real focus on, for example, how we train our inspectors to go out and inspect AP. So a real focus on making sure that our inspectors are upskilled in kind of getting the diversity and the differences of AP, and really getting under the bonnet of what's the particular core work and objectives of this AP for this young person, and can we see that and track that back through the commissioning agreements, so that we're really looking at what makes that AP unique and how does that AP convey the ambition for those young people to achieve in the way that Joe and Mark have described, in the way clearly that Grace is achieving. We continue to work, as you would expect, and have discussions with the DfE, with NHSE, with groups like ADCS that Joe's representing, and the sector that Mark represents, to try to make sure that we're really working collectively towards an understanding of what national standards might look like, and how might we get to a point where the ambitions that are set out in the DfE's SEND improvement plan are actually going to be delivered and meaningfully delivered, and in a way that is sustainable.
Thanks, Steve. And Grace, to bring it back to you, talking of the future, what are your plans? What's next for you?
I want to be a professional dancer. So we have Joe, who comes in on Tuesdays and sits us down and helps with like our college applications and that. So I think tomorrow I'm going to sit down with her and I'm going to find something out to obviously do with what I want to do.
Well, that sounds incredibly exciting. We all wish you the very best of luck with your conversation and future plans. And I'd just like to thank you and Mark and Joe and Steve for joining me today. You may have heard that Ofsted has launched its Big Listen. Please contribute by going to www.gov.uk/Ofsted Big Listen.
Ofsted Talks.
Ofsted Talks.
Ofsted Talks. Ofsted Talks.